So I'd like to welcome Merle Froschel and Barbara Sprung. They're going to be sharing with us their ideas from disengagement to engagement, educational equity for boys pre-K to primary five. Merle and Barbara are the co-directors of the Educational Equity Center at the Academy for Educational Development. And they were the co-founders and co-directors of the Educational Equity Concepts, which was a national nonprofit organization whose mission was to create bias-free programs and materials in early childhood. Both of them have had 35 to 40 years of experience in education and publishing. Merle has developed outstanding curricular and teacher training models in the field of educational equity and is nationally known as a speaker on issues of gender equity and equality of opportunity in education. And Barbara has published extensively and spoken nationally and internationally in early childhood education and is an innovator of programs and materials to promote equality of opportunity for children, regardless of gender, race, ethnicity, disability, or family income. So welcome.
Thank you. Barbara and I are going to share the presentation just like we've shared our work life over these many years. But we both want to thank you for inviting us and to this conference, and it's been a wonderful experience. And we're happy to share information with you on our work that comes from a project called Raising and Educating Healthy Boys. We began work on the Raising and Educating Healthy Boys project in 2000. We'd always been concerned with freeing both girls and boys from limiting stereotypes, and until the year 2000, our work focused mainly on girls. And this was true of the gender equity work in the United States in the main. And all the while the work on girls was happening, it was assumed that boys were doing fine. But in the 1990s, the growing literacy gap between girls and boys raised questions about this assumption. And as the body of research grew, we became interested in looking at the issue of young boys, and we're talking about boys at the early childhood level, their development and education, and particularly in determining the role that gender socialization plays in their academic and social success. We want to say that this does not at all mean that the work on girls will be ignored or stopped or ended, but that we believe if we focus on boys' school experience early on, we will improve education for all children, boys and girls alike. All of our work in the project is going to culminate in a textbook, a teacher education textbook called All They Can Be, which will be published in 2010. The issues. It may be stated differently around the world, but the problem remains the same. The fact is that boys are disengaging from school in alarming numbers, beginning at the very earliest levels of education. A clear example of this deficit thinking happened during an in-service course I was teaching when a teacher said that, or admitted that her nightmare, her worst nightmare, would be a class of all boys. And all the teachers in the room sort of nodded in understanding and sympathy. How different it would have been if those teachers, instead of viewing boys as liabilities, viewed boys' energy as a valuable asset to learning. Another issue is this unfortunate trend in the United States known as the push-down curriculum, or bringing more and more pencil and paper tasks to the early childhood curriculum. This and its corollary, high-stakes testing, exact a particular toll on boys. We also feel it's important to mention, because there's been so much attention to it, the current research on the difference in the, between male and female brains. The way it's being used can actually reinforce harmful stereotypes. The boys are active, girls are passive stereotype. And the vulnerable areas, starting in early childhood, there are broadly shared stereotypes about masculinity that impede boys' development in many areas. And while we are definitely focusing on work in the United States here, we'd be interested in the discussion how any of this, how you feel there are parallels with the work you're doing in other countries as well. Because research has shown that boys are vulnerable on a number of fronts: social emotional development, stigmatization and expulsion from preschool, referral to special education, and academic achievement, particularly in terms of literacy. On all measures, race and poverty combine to make some boys especially at risk. In the United States, these are African American and Latino boys. To talk about the stereotypes about masculinity, the ideas about how girls and boys are supposed to be are planted very early. And we believe that this gender socialization, the need to conform to a societal conception of what it means to be a man, plays a negative role in the social, emotional, relational, and academic development of boys. William Pollack has coined the phrase the boy code to express the constraints that boys feel to pretend to be normal and fine. And Kinlan and Thompson have dubbed it emotional illiteracy. In examining the boy code, we conducted focus groups for our Raising and Educating Healthy Boys project. And we wanted to examine what it meant for masculinity to place boys in a box. So each person at the focus group was asked to fill in two boxes. The first asked, what does it mean to be male in our society? And I tell you, parents and teachers had no problems coming up with a long list of expectations that fell on boys' shoulders. They needed to be powerful, they needed to be possess morals and principles, they needed to be leaders in the family, and they needed to do well in school at work. But then we asked, well, what happens to the boys who don't fit into box one? And once again, there were no problems in filling in the answers. And it became clear that the consequences of operating outside the box for boys were very severe. They were in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. As you saw in the answers to box one, there are high expectations for boys. And they're very tall orders. You have to be strong, you have to be brave, you have to be powerful, you have to be in charge. And boys who fail to meet these expectations experience social hardships and pressures. They feel isolated and worthless. And they could end up engaging in antisocial behavior for compensating for feeling unworthy for not fitting in the box. And another consequence that really has to be mentioned is the impact on sexuality and gender identity. The fear of being labeled a sissy or being considered feminine or really weighs very heavily on boys. And this sort of homophobic boundaries really limit the development of empathy and the ability to express it in boys from a very young age.
regarding social emotional development, a basic tenet of early childhood education is that the development of social emotional competence is a critical element of a child's success in school. Educationally, the process begins in preschool, and traditionally, it has been a key focus of the kindergarten year. Two factors, however, impede the necessary development of social-emotional skills. One, too many poorly and untrained preschool teachers. And two, the push-down curriculum that Merle mentioned that has curtailed teachers' ability to pay needed attention and is a critical factor contributing to boys' problems at the early childhood level and beyond. The newest edition of Developmentally Appropriate Practice, just published by the National Association for the Education of Young Children, reinforces the need to put social-emotional development at the forefront of early childhood practice, which must happen if children are to leave kindergarten having achieved the competencies described on this slide. Another big area that we have to engage in is about the stigmatization. A national study was conducted by Barbara Ronan Crawford describes how the early stigmatization and isolation from peers of African American boys begins the disengagement process in preschool. The researchers in teams of two conducted classroom observations of teacher-child interaction and the instructional and emotional climate of the classroom in over 100 classrooms in 6 geographically diverse states. Isolation of one child, usually a black boy, was a method of behavior management widely practiced by white and African American teachers. In the words of one observer, "I observed it over and over, and it wasn't just that it was always boys, it was always, always black boys." Stigmatization by a teacher leads to stigmatization by the children as well. The bad boy label is quickly attached and affects the child's sense of self-worth and ability to make friends and feel successful in school. Once that feeling of being unsuccessful sets in, it's hard to turn it around. So if it starts in preschool, what chance does the boy have? Expulsion from preschool and the suspension of the stigmatization are directly related to each other. The suspension is again prominently affected to African-American boys, and Walter Gilliam of the Yale University Child Study Center asked, in a great, large national study, asked teachers, "Have you ever expelled a student from preschool in the last 12 months?" The answers he got shocked the researchers and the world of early childhood education. He found that preschool expulsions are 3 times the national K-12 rate, that young boys are 5 times more likely to be expelled than girls, and that underlying it all is a lack of teacher preparation. Both stigmatization and expulsion have a great deal to do with the lack of understanding of child development and with racism. Children, once again boys of color, pay a huge price for their miseducation starting in preschool, and society too plays a large price in terms of incarceration costs and the tragic loss of human resources. I know we're running out of time. boys are overrepresented in special education. When Merle and I started EEC in 1982, this was an issue. In 2009, the statistics are not very different, and for many of the same reasons, ingrained attitudes about gender, race, and class. The reverse side of this picture is that girls who may need services are often underserved. The literacy gap, Merle spoke about it. It's enormous and it's growing. Boys score 16% lower in reading and 25% lower in writing. The gap begins in kindergarten. 3/4 of the gap is opened by 4th grade, and that is when high-stakes testing in the United States kicks in. The gap continues to grow as the boys move on to elementary school. We're running out of time. I think we have to say that boys that most at risk in our country are African-American and Latino boys. The statistics are pretty frightening. And I had a lot to say about the learning environment not being conducive to boys' success in school. The push-down test, the push-down curriculum, the high-stakes testing are inappropriate in terms of child development practices that we all know are important for young children. We'll move right on to strategies and
We'll go through them quickly. We realize they're out of time, but that's what happens when two people talk. Anyway, having looked at all the issues, we'll spend the last minute we have on strategies. Improving the educational outcomes for boys requires really a whole school system-wide approach based on a common vision and a coherent set of problems. But unfortunately, many of the interventions in the United States have not reached this systemic level. But there have been lessons learned, and we're going to look at them quickly in five areas. In pre-service and in-service education, you would think that gender equity could be at the core of the teacher education course syllabi, but this is not true. Gender equity in teacher education is spotty at best. And it's up to individual teachers to insert their ideas of gender equity into a standard course syllabi. What needs to happen, that it has to be required and intentional attitudes and expectations on the teacher's part about how that influences their teaching of boys needs to be examined. Group and self-reflection needs to happen where traditional classroom practices such as curriculum, room arrangement, and schedule will be questioned. And this can't stop at the end of teacher education as teachers enter their own classroom, but intensive and ongoing in-service models are necessary as well. There is a lot to say about literacy. I will just ask you to read this slide and say that boys who really are very resistant to reading and writing respond favorably to multiple media. They put a pencil and paper in their hands and they don't respond, but they absolutely flourish when writing storyboards, producing videos, creating animated scenarios, writing rap music, using information technology, building on their personal interests, engaging them in clubs. It turns out that men reading to boys is a very good strategy, and it kind of makes reading cool rather than just being a girl's thing.
I think that we don't really have to go very far into detail for any of us to understand the importance of family and community. The research is clear that positive relations with adults, particularly male adults, are a critical factor in boys' positive sense of self, and that family involvement, and the research is again very clear on this, in their child's education is a great indicator of school success. Also looking at families with regard for their knowledge rather than with disregard because of differences in background conveys a strong message to boys that they and their families are respected. This leads again into the importance of role models and mentors for boys seeing positive options, diverse people like themselves, functioning successfully in society in a variety of ways can go a long way towards changing a boy's perception of his personal possibilities. Michelle Fine has written extensively on the importance of one caring adult as a change agent in a young person's life. And then we have something that's appeared on the scene recently. We don't have any research on it. We just have anecdotal information that the fact that Barack Obama is the president of the United States is already making a difference in boys' perceptions of themselves. If we come back, we may have some very good statistics on that. I just want to say in closing, of course we know that the best practices outlined in this presentation make for more successful schooling for both boys and girls. The challenge is to make them intentional and actionable and systemic in every school, not just in a few exemplary ones. If we can accomplish this, then we can move boys from disengagement to engagement. Thank you.